Yesterday on Fresh Air, we talked with two satirists about the presidential campaign, Al Franken, who's writing for the Al Gore campaign, and Bill Maher, who's voting for Ralph Nader. This morning, I spoke with conservative satirist Christopher Buckley. He's voting for George W. Bush. Buckley is the author of the novels Little Green Men and Thank You for Smoking, and he's the editor of Forbes FYI magazine. Let me say that we had a harder time finding conservative comics and satirists than Democratic ones, and I'm wondering if you have any guesses about why that's true.
Well, my guess is that might be Republican satirists went into fields that compensate a little better than this one. There was a piece in the New York Times Sunday Magazine some weeks ago about political humor. It's focused in on the staffs of the people who work for Jay Leno and David Letterman and I think Jon Stewart. And it was interesting how uniformly liberal and left-wing they all were. While I caught a note here or two of sort of self-congratulation on their part for for daring to hold these beliefs, which struck me as sort of funny given the political homogeneity within the the joke writing crowd. It tends to be, I would say, 99% liberal. So that may be one reason why you had a hard time tracking down a so-called conservative pundit. But there are some brilliant ones, much better than myself. P.J. O'Rourke is surely the funniest, or at least for my money, the funniest political writer around, and he's very right wing. Maybe you should have called him.
May I say that we did call him?
Oh, you did call him.
Yes, we called you both.
Well, what was his excuse?
We called you both. Well, you called back, and he didn't.
That makes me sound rather desperate, I'm afraid.
No, I he might have been out of the country.
He was probably out of the
knows?
Country. Maybe he was drilling for oil in the Arctic preserve, getting a head start on George Bush.
Let me get to the presidential campaign.
Sure.
I was talking to a foreign journalist the other day, and he said, "I can't believe that you Americans might really elect someone so stupid as George W. Bush to be president." What would you have said to him?
Well, foreign journalists generally have a sort of a disdainful view of our politics. On that one, I would say that, politicians get pigeonholed into their sort of comic personas. Al Gore got typed early on as the stiff guy, and Bush got tagged as a dumb guy because he's not much of a book reader, and he can't pronounce words. Bush, I think, has managed to neutralize that a little bit by the good old ploy of making fun of yourself. But I don't think George W. Bush is a second Dan Quayle, despite the attempts to make him into one. Al Gore is obviously a better student. I mean, Al Gore is the guy who in high school would have raised his hand and reminded the teacher that she had forgotten to hand out the homework assignment.
Wait, you're the second person I heard say that.
Really?
Yeah, well, someone on the Ima show said the same thing.
Oh, is that right? Well,
yeah.
Well, either great minds think alike or I'm a plagiarist. No, I don't claim that's an original insight, but I think it's one worth repeating. Bush is the guy who shows up 5 minutes before the test, not having cracked a book, and asks whether or not this is the chemistry test or the history test. I leave it to you, to decide which one is funnier. I think as a satirist or someone who sort of writes about these people, I'm frankly torn as to who to be for this time around. I mean, in terms of who's going to be a funnier target for the next 4 years, I suspect that all these the liberal writers on the Leno and the Letterman and the other shows are secretly hoping for a Bush victory because he's going to be you know, putty in their hands. It's going to be 4 years of Quail 2. You can make fun of Gore, but Gore, I think, is a more... he's a more serious guy, obviously. And the humor that about Gore is going to have to go deeper because you're making fun, you're going to end up satirizing his such things as his inability, his apparent inability to tell the truth. Now that's perforce nastier, a nastier kind of humor than making subliminal jokes.
Now I want to get back to your comment about Al Gore being the equivalent of the smart kid in class who'd raise his hand and say, "But teacher, you forgot to give us homework." Why are people against Gore so concerned that he's too smart, that he's like the smart kid in class? Why is that perceived as a problem? Why wouldn't you want the president to be smart?
Well, you know, if IQ were the ultimate determinant of success in the Oval Office, Jimmy Carter would have been our most successful president. I mean, Jimmy Carter was, as he would describe himself, a nuclear engineer. And you know who the second brightest guy probably was? Richard Nixon. Now, neither of those two presidencies, I put it to you, ended in spectacular success. A very wise man once said that he would rather be ruled by the first 2,000 names in the Boston telephone book than by the faculty of Harvard.
So
I think with Gore, you would get the faculty of Harvard. With Bush, you get the first 2,000 names in the Boston phone book.
But you're a smart guy. Your father, William Buckley, is a smart guy.
And he's the guy who said that. I'm obviously aiming for an increase in my allowance.
So you're really arguing against voting
for a
smart guy?
No. If you reduce it to that, it sounds silly. I mean, the bumper sticker becomes vote for the dumb guy. You know, he'll be the best. No, I'm saying that IQ alone, smartness alone, is not the only qualification. I mean, David Halberstam wrote a brilliant book about this called The Best and the Brightest, which is about all the smart Harvard guys who got us into a long, tragic war in Vietnam. All of them were bright guys.
Yesterday on our show, we heard from satirist Al Franken, who's actually writing some material for Gore and working for the Gore campaign. And we heard from satirist Bill Maher, who says he would never write for a candidate. What about you? Have you ever or would you ever write for a candidate?
Well, I wrote for George Bush's father. I was his speechwriter for 2 years in 1981 to 1983 when he was vice president. I'm not I am not now, nor have I been writing material for George Bush.
You didn't come up with subliminal?
I wish I had. I really wish I had. They called me about a year ago and asked me, but I was in a slightly awkward position because I edit a magazine at Forbes, and as you know, my capo di tutti copy, Steve Forbes, was then running. So I said, well, I kind of can't do that, but he's got talented people. I would like to actually reveal who's writing George W.'s humor, and it's our old friend Ray Siller. When I heard this a week ago, I was amazed because Ray Siller. It was to Ray Siller that I used to turn when I was in the White House in 1981 to 83 for the jokes. He was then Johnny Carson's chief writer, and he liked Bush. He liked Bush's father, and he had volunteered his services. So I would call poor Ray Siller, and because there was a call from the White House, he would always take it, even if he was in a meeting with Johnny Carson. I always felt moderately embarrassed about that. And I would say to poor Ray Siller, Ray, he's speaking to the National Association of Realtors tomorrow. Do you have any realtor jokes? And I would hear this sigh on the other end. He'd say, well, I'll call you back. And, you know, the next day, Bush would be about to go on, 5,000 realtors in Miami, Florida, whatever, and a WACA guy, White House communications guy, would come up with one of those heavy, clunky portable phones and say, some guy named Ray Siller for you. And Ray would, I would sit there taking dictation on index cards from Ray and do a quick humor triage of the funniest jokes and hand them to George Bush before he went on, and so I was sort of thrilled to hear that he's still doing that 20 years later.
Do you have any favorite lines that you wrote for President Bush?
No, I didn't write read my lips or any particularly I don't think memorable lines, but we had some there were some good moments. It was, you know, the lines don't survive, but they were, you know, they were, some of them were not bad. There were some there were a couple of flubs when I those always end up being the most memorable ones. One time I put a quote from the historian Thucydides in the speech, and it he got to that word, and it he got kind of tongue-tied, poor guy, and it he went ooh, and it went on for about 15 seconds, and I was sitting at the staff table opposite Admiral Murphy, the four-star admiral who was the chief of staff, and, you know, I went to a Catholic school, and I thought I knew strict, but I'd never worked for a four-star admiral before. They're really strict. And he started glaring at me, and I looked at the admiral saying, wait, I didn't make up this word. And anyway, finally Bush got it out, Sidides, and Admiral Murphy came up to me afterwards and poked me in the sternum and said, next time say Plato.
What are you going to be doing on election night?
I'm going to be sitting at home with this TV that I bought that I still can't figure out how to use. But if you figure out how to use it, it will split the screen so that you can see what, you know, one network is doing and then flick to the other. But I have a week to get through this 200-page instruction manual. So if I do, I will be sitting at home watching my new split-screen TV. And I think it's going to be an exciting night. I think it's going to be a late night.
Well, I hope you don't have to learn how to program your VCR in the next week, too, because then you're really going to be in trouble.
That's hopeless. Hopeless. I read some years ago that William Shatner, Captain Kirk of the Starship Enterprise, could not program his VCR, and I was delighted.
Well, Christopher Buckley, thank you so much for talking with us.
Thank you, Terry.
Christopher Buckley's latest novel is Little Green Men. He's the editor of the magazine Forbes FYI. Coming up, TV critic David Bianculli remembers Steve Allen. This is Fresh Air.